I bring all that up just from like some of it's, you know, just funny gossip talk. Some of it also though is part of the game where it's like CEOs who are making, and they've pointed this out, the Writers Guild and advocates point out like what the writers are asking for is like,
it was 3%.
Yeah. Like it is a hit the CEOs could easily take.
This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. This is the Bruce Poinsett Show. Oh, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett. Along with my producer, Ado, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio at the Portland Art Museum.
This is the best of the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. I'm your host, Bruce Poinsett, and along with my producer, Ado, we bring you this weekly commentary and interview experience from the Numbers FM studio at the Portland Art Museum. You can catch the full show every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7. You can also catch clips on youtube.com/Bruce Poinsett, plus exclusive bonus content on patreon.com/Bruce Poinsett. Make sure to follow us on twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM, that's Numbers with a Z, or the Numbers Podcast Network on thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's Numbers with a Z, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bruce Poinsett Show, the world's most dangerous infomercial. And we did this before. We're going to do another, every now and then we got to do a little media mashup. There's a lot happening in the news, and there's a lot of news about how the news is made that we got to talk about.
Yep.
I think the big thing right now is there's a writer's strike.
Right? Yeah.
America on strike, all your, you know, your films, TV shows. Maybe they're not, like if you watch late night shows, they're paused right now.
They're done.
You're probably not going to feel, if you're just consuming, you're probably not going to feel the writer's strike for at least a few more months.
Yeah.
But that said, you know, I was going through a list of, let's see, where were we talking about? Movie Web, about 15 shows and movies affected by the last writer's strike in, I believe, 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to number three and I'm like, I think Ado might have some thoughts on this because, hey, would you call yourself a fan of Transformers?
I'm one of the biggest fans of Transformers, I believe, in the state of Oregon. So, yes, I would definitely call myself a fan of Transformers.
Yeah. So, admittedly, I have not seen Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, but I see it at number three on this list. And as we're talking, as we kind of like get into the, actually, let me back up before we get into Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Just so people have kind of like a frame of reference on the writer's strike, is basically the big sticking point right now is with streaming, the profits are, you know, going mostly to the CEOs.
Right.
They're trying to offer writers basically like day rates, underpaid, making it, you know, making these jobs in these writers' rooms basically like gig employment.
Right.
And the writers aren't going for it.
They do not like it. Also trying to keep AI out of writing, which I think makes a lot of sense because it's not, you're taking away a huge industry that we've been relying on since the beginning of entertainment. Can't do that.
Yeah, like the creativity behind the writers and the things that, you know, AI is ever evolving, but it's still got a long way to go to be able to anticipate the creativity of creative people. So exactly. We don't want, I'm sorry, I don't want to see a ChatGPT series.
I'm good.
You don't have to try and prove it to me. No.
No.
Anyway.
I don't want to see it.
Yeah. So with that said, there's a number of very notable casualties. I think about X-Men Origins Wolverine is
terrible film.
But
terrible
again,
film.
That's number two on this list. Mm-hmm. Number three, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Ado is someone who's a fan of the Transformers. How was that movie for you since I missed that?
That is simultaneously one of my favorite and least favorite films of all time. I love it because I love Transformers and like it is a part of that history. I think I love it in the same way that deep cut Star Wars fans love The Phantom Menace because it is comedic and ridiculous. But I hate it because it is very clear. And like most of the live action Transformers movies aren't very good. Like they're just not very well written movies. But that one in particular, you can tell was deeply affected by the fact that there was like, it was like, I understand from how I understand it, the director, who is a raging misogynist and someone who has a terrible sense of comedy and gives racist vibes, every week, because they didn't have a script, they just had like ideas. It was like he would come with new pages for the movie that they were currently filming and give them to the cast and crew. And it shows. Like the movie has like, I understand why Megan Fox left the series, because like she is just sexualized throughout the whole movie. I understand the writing is terrible. There are two Transformers that you would think it would be very difficult to make giant alien robots extremely racist, but Michael Bay found a way. It is like gross. It is weird. The comedy is bad. The storyline does not make a lot of sense. Even as someone who knows a lot about nonsensical Transformers history, it just does not make sense. And it is so terrible. But it is a hilarious watch if you ever have the time. It's one of those movies that feels like, I think it's maybe only 2 hours, but it feels like you're there for five.
Whew. Good Lord.
Yeah.
So yeah, if people are wondering, if you're watching, you see the stripe, you're like, so what? I don't write. I just consume this. Whatever happens, happens. This is the type of content you might be expecting soon, because mm-hmm. what happens during the strike is obviously the writers are not writing. So they right. bring in what, you know, union terms would call scabs, or people who are willing to basically cross the picket line.
Yep.
Sometimes it's just, you know, the producers writing the stuff themselves. Sometimes it's just, again, people who their only entrance in is going to be taking this opportunity.
Yep.
And you can tell, you can tell the difference.
Oh, you can tell. You can very clearly tell. Yeah.
So that's coming, but on a more, you know, if we want to talk about what are more substantive effects of this, especially when we're having this conversation around media mm-hmm. and the behind the scenes of the media.
Yes.
Like fighting for writers to be paid. And again, this is, it's kind of like just the story about the importance of unions in general mm-hmm. and fighting for workers to make a living wage.
Yeah.
Like it shouldn't, especially, you know, I say this as someone who's freelance writer in Portland. I'm not in Hollywood, but I understand that it's almost jarring sometimes. Like I listen to a lot of podcasts that are basically actors/writers mm-hmm. who will be very transparent about the fact that the only reason they're doing this podcast for iHeart or The Ringer or somewhere is because, or to say The Ringer, but Spotify, like mm-hmm. these platforms, is because they're working gig jobs. Like they're making the ends meet. They're doing yeah. this to raise their profile mm-hmm. and to, again, make the money they need to survive.
To live.
And like, they're talking, like, these are people I've seen on TV.
Yes.
You know, those people who are doing major, like they are regulars. I listened to this podcast, Yo, Is This Racist? Tawny Newsom is a Star Trek regular mm-hmm. now. You know, and it's jarring listening to her talk about her work the same way sometimes it feels like I'm talking about what I do, again, mm-hmm. as a freelance writer bouncing around in Portland. Like, that's wild.
These are folk in Hollywood.
But also, I think what's interesting about this, listening to the podcast now, because again, we're recording this on May 18th, mm-hmm. and the strike has been going for a few weeks, but now it's in that phase where you're starting to, especially with these people kind of like in the know who make content, are starting to talk about, I was listening to it on the episode today, where we're talking about the vibes check period
yeah.
of the movements, where, you know, the initial news hype is starting to quiet down, and what happens?
Yep.
The splintering over, know, some very legitimate issues, like people brought up even in the beginning, how white the Writers Guild of America is.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's a thing.
That's a huge thing.
You know, but even stuff that's even a little more cheekier of, like, who has good signs? Who has bad signs? Right. Are some people, they called it what was it, like the Times Square, like Spider-Man type element, where it's like, are some people dressing up a little bit too much? Like,
right.
where is the line? What is it? You know, I bring all that up just from, like, some of it's, you know, just funny gossip talk. Some of it also, though, is part of the game, where it's like CEOs who are making, and they've pointed this out, the Writers Guild and advocates point out, like, what the writers are asking for is, like,
it was 3%.
Yeah. Like, it is a hit the CEOs could easily take.
This is an easy, like, it's crazy because, like, this is, to me, below the bare minimum what they've been asking for. Like, don't put AIs in so then we don't lose our job, and then pay us 3% of your streaming rights from the shows that we are literally writing. That is, like, the below bare minimum to me. Like, the writers should and could ask for more.
Yeah. Like, it is very reasonable, but the goal with every strike with the people, the owners, CEOs, people in power is always, well, let's starve these people out. How long can you stay off the job?
Right.
How long can you afford to do this? And again, that's how you get the scabs and you get the people. I saw that, was it Ken Jennings, you know, from winning Jeopardy, you know, being the guy on Jeopardy.
Yep.
Like Maeen Ballack, who's host Jeopardy in solidarity with the writers, was like not going to host. And then Ken Jennings stepped in. And I loved it because I saw this originally just like on a post on Twitter, and the caption was, "What is a scab?"
There we go.
Yeah.
That's one.
But even like, but it does have reverberations to those of us, again, who are not directly involved. Mm-hmm. Like in your case, how much of your content is made around like comic book, TV, like properties?
Most all of it, like other than like music, it's like all the content I consume is run by writers who are mostly in the Writers Guild.
Yeah. Like there's just, again, the reverberations to who this is going to affect, not to mention a direct, like, economic level in L.A. and Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when the writers aren't working, guess what they're also not doing? They're also not spending, you know, at restaurants.
Right.
During the day, at, you know, shopping, doing all the, like, consumer stuff in the city that powers the city.
Right.
Like, it is... it's actually like bringing things there to a halt.
It's a mess.
Like, and again, for 3%.
3%.
But God, if they ask for 3%, then everyone else is going to. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, they are. And you should pay them.
You should pay people. You should pay your writer. It's just the fact that this has happened two times at like a huge level in my lifetime is really confusing, because it's like, we are aware, like, there is no TV or movies without writers, without people who are able to write these things. And let's say, like, the strike keeps going and they choose not to back down. It's like, then you are trusting computers now to write these movies for you. Like, you have to trust computers. And, like, you might think that'll work, but it won't. It just, like, there's something about, there's not enough ideas. There's not enough, like, we have writers for a reason, because they come up with the ideas. They write the scripts. They'll consult on a script. Like, there's a lot that writers do that we don't always see.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you can't run this Hollywood thing without them. Like, you just can't.
Exactly. So, you know, because I know a lot of people, their engagement with the writer's strike is going to be, like, seeing the posts on social media, seeing, like, you know, the, like, famous actors who are standing in solidarity with the writers. And kind of, like, the thing that happens internally with a lot of people is, like, oh, screw that famous person, that celeb, whatever.
Right.
Type thing. They don't think it's relatable, but like I said, it's one, it reverberates into like all the stuff that we do.
Right.
But then also at the heart of it, we're talking about jobs. We're talking mm-hmm. about being able to make a living wage. Like, we don't live in a world yet where we're in a country even where we have, you know, all the safety net stuff in place, where we have universal basic income, where we have things that make sure people are taken care of.
Right.
So all this, like, forcing people into, you know, gig work that shouldn't be gig work, or as just to like move on from the strike, seeing mass layoffs. So like a thing that has just been really, really concerning to me. I think the most recent ones, because this, again, it's not just media, obviously, it's happening all across industries, but it's like Vice News, BuzzFeed News, MTV yeah. News, all just shuttered, and or Vice News Tonight, I should say. Mm-hmm. And it's like, admittedly, like, I haven't watched MTV News or like consumed MTV News content in God knows how years. Long. I used to watch Vice News TV, mm-hmm. but yeah, just, and like, they do a really good job, but just haven't watched in years. And BuzzFeed News has always been just kind of like, if they happen to be covering something, mm-hmm. you know, I'll get there.
Worthwhile.
So people say, well, why, if you don't even consume these, why do you care? One, because mass layoffs means masses of people out of work,
losing their jobs.
Two, whether I'm consuming this news or not, it's important. Having reporters covering the news, whether it's entertainment, mm-hmm. whether it's like local government, especially right. because that's where you see a huge gap in what's able to be covered in city council meetings. And the only things that you have to have, like, these viral, you know, visceral moments to like get covered. So there's wild stuff happening in school board meetings every time. There's wild things just being proposed in the budgets, mm-hmm. never mind. But if it's going to make the news, it's usually like a group of screaming white people being like, we don't right. want to wear masks, or, you know, we don't want trans children to exist. It's that type of thing, which yes. is horrible and does deserve coverage, obviously, because it's an existential threat to students and mm-hmm. people. But these things that, these decisions that affect people, these decisions to say, oh, like PPS trying to bring back cops into schools after right. they just finally pulled them out. All this stuff goes under the radar, and you need reporters. And not just, I think people don't take these jobs seriously, and that's a thing that bothers me. But even though we see the effects, we need, because it shouldn't just be on volunteers.
Yeah,
absolutely. Even if you are the most well-intentioned person, you're going to burn out because you're dealing with so much, trying to cover this and all the stuff that goes into it.
It's work.
Yeah. It's a job. Like, it's a full-time job where you should be receiving a livable wage yes. and benefits like other jobs.
Like your other jobs.
You know, just, it's really, it's that simple. And again, it's covering stuff that's important. But of course, that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing massive layoffs. We're seeing, you know, I don't want to be mad at people for, you know, especially like on social media, just like having this, like, I won't call it this affair with ChatGPT, mm-hmm. even though, I don't know. It's, on one hand, you have the people saying, hey, we can't, this AI is going too far, but you also have a lot of people who are like, actually, ChatGPT is kind of fun. Actually, you know, it does. I've had people tell me, like, hey, it actually does help me. You know, I get stuck with writing and it helps me fill out the thoughts. And it's like, and I get that. So I'm not trying to be here like, we have to ban AI, because the reality is that's not how it works.
It's not how it's going to go either.
Like, consumers, again, we allude to just the people playing around, whether it's ChatGPT, whether it's AI art thing mm-hmm. that was happening before that, if it's just, you know, convenience apps, whether it's like Uber, DoorDash, whatever, we know that from a consumer standpoint, people like convenience and ease. Mm-hmm. I like self-checkout. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I realized I was part of the problem.
Yeah.
But also, and from the ownership CEO standpoint, if they can pay less people salaries and benefits and they can cut their bottom line, they like it too.
They will do it immediately.
So the idea that we're just going to ban AI, like, I get where people are coming from. I empathize with the position. It's just, it's not going to happen. And you're going to find yourself spending more time fighting with your friends than the owners or CEOs making these decisions.
Right.
If you really try and push for it. If I'm just not trying to discourage people, but I'm just being real. That said, absolutely, it can't just be right now we're headed to this place where it's only one thing. We're moving more towards AI. We're cutting these jobs for short-term benefits. Sometimes not even like for the company necessarily.
Yeah. Because
also owners, CEOs are beholden to their shareholders and you know, people who have smaller stakes who just want the profits of the company, just want to make more money. You can do that. And like I was reading an article in Al Jazeera about that in the financial industry where, again, like some of the decisions they're making aren't even good for the banks, but they are structurally beholden to their shareholders. So right, just screwing people over anyway. But bring it back to media. So you have all these places shuttering. You're losing news coverage. And again, if people may not have felt it as much. Like I said, I haven't watched MTV News in years. But you know it when it's gone, because whatever coverage you thought you weren't feeling, when it's not there,
is
things happen.
You feel it. Now you feel it.
Yeah. And that's, so again, you have mass layoffs, a lot of people who, like, the news industry is hard. Media in general, it's hard. I don't want to shoot too much bail to CEOs, especially of these big companies, of Viacom and everything. But I will say, like, figuring out how to make the business of media work, it's not like we're in a tough time. So like, I know too many like small, I worked at a community newspaper. I get it. But there has to be something like we have to be able to value this and actually like invest in it when we know, again, the decisions that happen in city council, the decisions that happen in the school board,
right?
They affect us. You are like, as a, you know, journalism, creative nonfiction teacher, I do a lot of like media literacy work because I see how lacking it is. And I see that there isn't, you know, if you go to a school with a good journalism program, and not all schools have a journalism program.
Good to say.
Like, maybe you'll get some of this, but for the most part, people are not going to get this information. They're not, you know, like, they're not learning how to fact check things. They're not learning why fact checking is important.
Right.
They don't know how, sort of like how stories are kind of like fit into different angles, and like they don't understand what it means that, you know, we can watch TV, we know that the commercials come on, but people don't really put it together that when they're watching the commercials, this is who's paying for what you're watching. Because
this is how it's here.
Again, we don't, like, it's something you talk about in journalism school, but I don't think, you know, I just have this wild thought that you shouldn't have to go to journalism school to understand the things that, again, are affecting your life.
Agreed.
Directly.
100%.
Like, that just seems basic, but it, again, the decisions are being skewed towards ownership, towards CEOs, and we're getting what we get from that, which brings me to our next media story that I think definitely went under the radar, but the Washington Post recently did a story called MLK's Famous Criticism of Malcolm X Was a Quote Fraud, Author Finds. And basically, like, this goes to an Alex Haley interview. For those who aren't familiar with Alex Haley, he's author of Roots, co-author of the autobiography of Malcolm X. He has since, he has passed, but he's since come under fire for plagiarism in roots and mm-hmm. exaggerating a lot of parts of the story in the autobiography of Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. So his reputation as an author had already been kind of tarnished, mm-hmm. but now recently, Jonathan Eig, a professor at Duke University, was going through the archives of an interview he did with Martin Luther King Jr. for Playboy and found that a quote, again, just like attacking Malcolm X, was basically fabricated. Like, just pull from the article here. Some of the phrases added to King's answer appear to be taken significantly out of context, while others appear to be fabricated. Bullet point one, I feel that Malcolm has done himself and our people a great disservice, end quote. King does not say this or anything similar anywhere in the 84-page interview transcript. I'll say that again. 84-page interview transcript.
Wow, lying from the get.
Okay. Bullet point number two, quote, fiery demagogic oratory in the black ghettos urging Negroes to arm themselves and prepare to engage in violence, .. end quote. King says this phrase much earlier in the transcript on page 12 and in the answer to the question, quote, Dr. King, what is your opinion of Negro extremists who advocate armed violence and sabotage, end quote. King gives a lengthy response that begins, quote, fiery demagogic oratory in the black ghettos urging Negroes to arm themselves and prepare to engage in violence can achieve nothing but negative results, end quote. Mm-hmm. So again, just to pull it back to the original, or not the original quote, but like this quote that Alex Haley kind of, he cherry-picked some parts, fabricated others. This has been used as part of like the scholarship on the divide between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and, you know, sort of like the more definitely traditional, respectable, quote unquote, civil rights movement and like black power movements. So like, it's not a small thing.
Definitely heard they hated each other because of school.
But yeah. So this thing that is kind of like helped fuel. And like, let's be real, like Malcolm X has said and did say in interviews some wild stuff about him. Okay. Like, it's not like they were just the best of friends and people completely lied.
Mm-hmm.
That said, lying on Dr. King to make it worse in Playboy
is wow. Yeah. That's crazy. 84 pages. And oh, that's whack. That's very whack.
Yes. And there was another part of this that gave me pause because Alex Haley also, you know, further scholarship on his life determined like he was dealing with a lot of like financial struggles. And that may have been one of the reasons that he chose to
do what he did.
Emphasize. In fact, I'll take the directly from the article. Haley, who spent much of his life struggling to pay bills, may have decided to emphasize or exaggerate King's and Malcolm X's differences to increase his public profile, Joseph suggested. So, you know, we talked about a strike. We talked about mass layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
These things are all directly related.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at, I mean, I want people watching this to even think about some of the news we consume today. Like when there are black people are not a monolith, black leaders are not a monolith.
Right.
And there are definitely a lot of people with differences. But when you look at like how those differences are exploited, especially in a social media, YouTube space, and the fact that like we know that like internet drama is something that people lean into.
Absolutely.
For the viewership, for the followers, for the subscriptions. Like we're talking about the old school version of that, but it's the same thing. And it all comes back to just making money to, you know, put food on your plate because you don't have that security.
Right.
So you, even if you'll do something that, you know, is not just harming like the people directly mentioned, but could be like harming black people as a whole for, in this case, generations.
Right.
Because the money is that desperate. Like that says, that speaks volumes.
That's a lot. That speaks a lot.
Yeah. So again, yeah, highly encourage people to look up that story in the Washington Post and, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's especially when you think about like the autobiography of Malcolm X is one of my favorite books ever. Mm-hmm. You know, the Spike Lee Malcolm X movie that's mostly based on that. One of my favorite movies ever. But, and I should say that in enjoying those things, having consumed them, having them have those things kind of like just, you know, touch my soul in a way.
Right.
I'm prone to, you know, I want to regard them in this infallible light.
Mm-hmm.
But there's realities here. And there's, yep. You know, we have to, we talked about the importance of fact checking. This is a case study in the importance of fact checking. Just because we have to get it right.
The ultimate anecdote for fact checking. Just check your facts, y'all. Just check them.
Yes. So I talk about why do we need media literacy in schools? I don't know, because an act of not fact checking can literally affect people for generations.
Mm-hmm.
And let's bounce over, going from Malcolm and Martin to white nonsense.
Let's go. The classic. Anything.
So the Daily Loud, I don't follow them, but you know, they're one of those hip hop media platforms, yeah. Aggregators, something like that. And they were in the news recently because they put out apparently false update on Jamie Foxx being, I think they said like the family's preparing for the worst.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then the daughter, I want to say, came out and was like, you know, this is false.
My dad's been home for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I was like, Kev on stage did kind of like a post really talking about just how, you know, the Daily Loud is white owned. And what does it mean that white owned companies, because it's far from the only one who they have this power as aggregators, and they're actually driving a lot of the discussion we're having
right
around black people and black issues. And a lot of people really don't like that. That went viral because I think a lot of people really don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, from me as a media standpoint, it's like, yeah, I, on one hand, like when I see people post like, oh, you didn't know? Really? Like, I get that personally. It's like, yeah, a lot of this stuff, black targeted versus black owned media, a lot of people are just consuming black targeted
media, not black owned.
You know, uncritically, and assuming it is black owned. And then, but also, it does say a lot that what are the conversations black targeted media are facilitating and fueling and generating. So we're talking about lying on the health conditions of a celebrity.
Yes.
Or all these, you know, really just a lot of these like lowest common denominator, like gender war stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In, you know, a lot of like reality TV fodder type content.
They're not afraid to do some reality TV type vibes. Yeah. That's Daily Loud for you.
And, you know, a spinoff of the Daily Loud and other white aggregators conversations got a lot of people talking about No Jumper, which we talked about on this show.
Yeah.
You know, again, platform by Adam 22 started actually with interesting intentions. good intentions. I'm not even gonna say good intentions knowing all the stuff he does, but it started off with a good concept of like, hey, we're gonna platform like artists who are like on the cusp but haven't like gained that national following. This is gonna be the space where you're gonna see some of their first interviews before they blow up. Great. But what was the content? It was TMZ trash, like lowest common denominator.
Some of the worst interviews and like moment. Adam 22 runs the No Jumper team runs like so tabloidy and cares so much about like people snitching on themselves and like coming asking the questions that nobody should be asking. Like, and it's just like, it's so like, it feels inappropriate. It feels like they're also just taking from the culture. Like they just are.
Oh, absolute culture vulture stuff. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, the big pivot has been like they had Richard Spencer, you know, chief one of the chief white supremacists, and they just like platformed him for his, you know, as he's trying to rebrand himself post Charlottesville, because he was one of the leaders of that rally, in case people have forgotten. And they've been having, it's not just him, you know, they've had other people who've been doing a lot of like very blatant, loud anti-Semitism.
Yes.
You know, loud white supremacist content. And he's just, that's what he's been doing. He's made that pivot. And it's, it was wild to see with that is, you know, some of the artists who, like, I like, enjoy, like, it's one thing, I'll say this, artists who I enjoy who have still gone on the platform post this.
Right.
And, like, not like, oh, this was taped before and we're just doing this. Like, no, like.
People are hopping on.
Yeah. And, like, some of that, like, for the bigger name people, I don't, you know, you do what you got to do in this media landscape, I guess.
Right.
But it's a head scratcher for me. I at least understand it for, like, again, like local smaller artists who are like, you're looking for anywhere, any platform to get your music out there past, you know, state lines. It's still a little ew, but at least I get that.
Right.
But when I see someone who's like, you know, I see like multi-platinum legends doing No Jumper interviews post Richard Spencer.
Nah.
Like that's it's disturbing.
It's
bad.
It's like, it's not good. And it's like, truthfully, like as someone who's seen the evolution of No Jumper and like who, all the different eras, it's just not worth it. Like he is what Adam 22, the type of content that he curates is not for, especially the underground music culture. And we see that now because there's multiple other channels that underground music fans enjoy that are doing what he does, but in a respectful manner. Yeah. Like, truthfully respectful to the artist and respectful to the audience.
Yeah. And, like, I'm just gonna say this, because I want people to, again, consume critically.
Mm-hmm.
Soon thoughtfully.
Mm-hmm.
But part of it, I ask the questions like, why is it, especially when people don't actually know that these are like white owned companies?
Right.
What is it about this content? Because, yeah, it's lowest common denominator, you know, just by that label. Like,
yeah,
it's supposed to be the same tabloid stuff that gets everyone.
Right.
But also, why is it? Like, is it just, yes, these people have the money and the power to be able to, like, spread their platforms out there in ways that other creators don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's very real.
Right.
The algorithm, you know, it's made by a lot of, like, white tech companies.
Yes.
Like, it's in line with a lot of the people making this content, so it's going to work for them. But also, tell you like how many conversations I have with just other not white people,
yeah,
responding to this stuff where it's just absolutely like, this is what we're consuming. This is, you know, even from a, cause we're going to talk about sports media in just a second, but like the number of people I see who they don't watch Skip Bayless, they hate Skip Bayless.
Right.
But they say Skip Bayless-like things on their own accord, and they volunteer Skip
Bayless takes
all day.
Yep.
It's like, how does that work? How do you have, especially, how do you have Black people who are, like, conscious, you know, who, like, they are very conscious of racism and, like, class dynamics, but if we're talking about the right, like, sports topic, they will, again, voluntarily fall into like that Skip Bayless lane.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen? Because honestly, I feel like that's even deeper than like, yes, we can expose and talk about who owns what.
Right.
But if that's the content that's selling, that's the business model.
Right.
So the same. So yeah, we can talk about the white people, but you know, DJ Academics does that too.
DJ Ack, yep.
You know, bigger level, Charlamagne does that too.
Right.
You know, it's not like
Joe Budden plays in that, yep, court. Like,
What do we do about that? Because that's the deeper problem.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is nice at least to see people who are, when exposed to like, oh, this is why, well, I feel differently now. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then there's some hope there. But at the end of the day,
we have a lot of people willing to double down.
Yeah. So, you know, hopefully, again, I encourage people, there are tools for this. MediaBiasFactCheck.com.
Yep.
You can go and look up any outlet that has like any kind of like circulation. It'll tell you all you need to know, like their political slants, if they have a history of factual errors, who owns them,
right?
All the information you need to like understand the perspective of where the news or the information you're consuming is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Use these things. They will help you. I'm not saying stop watching whatever. Like, I personally would say, don't watch No Jumper stuff.
Please don't. But do what you want.
Yeah. Live your life.
Do what you had to.
So that brings us to sports coverage.
Yeah.
And this isn't a story, but, you know, watching the playoffs, a friend brought this question up to me because I really hadn't thought about it. He's like, isn't it weird that, like, you have Charles Barkley on all these gambling commercials? And, you know, like, it seems like, when I say it, it seems really obvious because it's like, yeah, a person who, at least, I don't know if he's ever like fully admitted it or said it on TV, but
has a gambling addiction. Yeah,
there's a perception, at least, that he has a real gambling addiction, a real problem. Why is he selling gambling every commercial break? Why are he and Kenny laughing and joking about their parlay between mm-hmm. the quarters? Maybe this is a problem. And it got me thinking, though, what does it mean that gambling is paying for so much sports media, especially quote unquote new media?
Right. Yeah.
Because if you look at it, like, they're not hiding this. They're like, yes, we're funded by DraftKings. We're funded by Underdog Fantasy.
Yeah.
They just did an interview with Rasheed Wallace and Bonzi Wells for basically like on the Jailblazers era for Underdog Fantasy. And part of it was an interview about that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was also very much like an informal promo / like rallying cry to make the Jailblazers documentary that people have been talking about mm-hmm. in Portland.
Right.
As like, on one hand, it's like, it's actually a really good interview. It was good content. And I actually would like to see that documentary.
I agree. Same here.
But also, yeah, what does it mean that so much of this, because it's like the new media, old media, ESPN, TNT, now that like sports betting has been legalized, like it is everywhere.
Go.
It is in your face. It mm-hmm. is each time. And, you know, thankfully, you know, I have my vices. Gambling is not one of them. So
yep, same here. You know,
some of the things I wouldn't think about, even just the idea of like how absurd it is that Charles Barkley is in all these commercials.
Right.
Like, it's like, yeah, whatever. We've legalized sports betting. It's everywhere. But like, there are one for people who are dealing with gambling addiction. Like, it is it's a free for all mm-hmm. thrown in your face that seems
makes it mad accessible.
Yeah, it seems like it could be harmful in some ways.
Yeah.
But also, like we talk about, media is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Making the money work is hard.
Yes.
So when you can find a source, and gambling is also very profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So when you can find that source to pay for it, you can get different things. You can get, maybe you get this Jailblazers documentary. You get, I look at people like Rasheed Wallace and Kevin Garnett, who, for better or worse, it feels like partnerships with these gambling platforms have actually figured out how to like utilize their personalities on screen
right.
in a way that TNT and ESPN really just couldn't do. So like that is a very tangible thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, again,
it's gambling. Like that it is, at the end of the day, something that is an addictive process for a lot of people. And that is also like, I don't know if we've spent time talking about this, but like gambling then now makes bribing that much easier.
Yeah.
In the sports world. That, and like, not to speak on down on anyone, because I don't know who would or who wouldn't, but it's like there are for sure players in every league across the board that will take bribe money over a championship or over anything. Like, people will throw games, people will throw matches, like, for money. They will.
Yeah, it's affecting the integrity. It got very real effects on the integrity of the sport.
Right.
Have very, again, very real effects on just people dealing with gambling addiction. And it's just not, it's very clearly, I don't know, I try and compare it to like other, you know, who else is sponsoring this thing. So see a lot of alcohol commercials.
Right.
And like, so I compare it with that as like, how much do they have the, you know, drink responsibly versus gamble responsibly? Or like, how is that even emphasized?
Right.
Is it close? Like, even if that, and does that, the way it's put out there, does that matter? If it's like one very quick drink responsibly in, you know, in lettering, but it's just a fun party.
Right.
Right. What's the message you're going to get? So it is an interesting thing to see with the landscape.
Yeah.
And to see where things are going.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to, and we've talked about this before, we had Max Smith in studio about the Cam and Mace sports show.
Yeah.
Because I look at the flip side of like, okay, if you're not being funded by the traditional sources, you're not on TV, and you're not new media that's being fueled by sports betting.
Right.
Then how are you getting it made? So if you watch It Is What It Is, which is the Cam and Mace sports show, you'll notice that the commercial breaks, they're selling dick pills.
Yeah.
Like, they're full unabashed pink power horse.
Yep.
Cam music. Like, it's the same commercials except with black people and camera on music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, some of them are kind of low-key hilarious. I'm not going to lie. But like, they're also very, like, commercials I used to make fun of for years with, God, what was the... There's one that used to be on ESPN all the time. It's like, text hard for your free sample.
Yeah.
So it is that exact.
We're now seeing Cam and Mace do the same thing.
Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, because, you know, the platform that was pretty infamous. I mean, there's a lot of platforms that they're not inventing the wheel with or reinventing the wheel with that. That's mm-hmm. very old. But one of the first platforms that comes to mind when I think about that angle, unfortunately, it's like Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just selling supplements.
Selling supplements. Wow. Yep, that's real.
And I think, because, you know, people are going to look at that and be like, well, does this not make this less legit than, you know, Skip Bayless as Jason Concepcion calls the Lizard Man going on TV in a suit and saying ridiculous stuff, asking if John Morant is a Crip or not?
Yeah.
How less legitimate is Mace and Cameron selling dick pills between wild sports takes? I don't know. All I know is that it all comes back down to, how do you make the money work?
Yeah.
Because on one hand, like, I can be very critical of all the implications of just giving sports betting free reign over sports coverage.
Yeah.
But the flip side, of course, is, again,
how are they going to pay for it?
Yeah. Someone has to pay for this media.
Someone's got to pay for the people on TV.
Where, again, MTV News, mass layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Vice News Tonight, mass layoffs. BuzzFeed News, mass layoffs. And by the time this comes out, it might be like three more sites. When the writers are on strike. When we got stories about how Alex Haley may have just fueled division between MLK and Malcolm X because of money.
Right.
When we're talking about all these white owned hip hop platforms that
willing to fabricate stories.
Fabricate stories, exploit black people and black culture.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't mean that softly. I mean, exploit
fully,
you know, for their profit, and people don't even know. But also at the same time, people were trying to get their stuff off are still coming to these platforms, even though they are socially conscious people, because the money, and they got to make their business work. What is the answer? Where do we get the investment in media so it's not just, you know, right now, not just the people with power with questionable intentions at best running the show and holding, holding all the levers of power, because that's where we are.
Right.
It's a scary time.
It's a weird time for sure.
You know, we promote on here, patreon.com/BrucePoinsett, youtube.com/BrucePoinsett. Mm-hmm. Subscribe, support the channel. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend, though, like that's going to solve the media issue. At the same time, though, we got to look at alternative, holistic, holistic, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like other sustainable sources
of income
to keep this media thing afloat.
Right.
Because it's dire out here.
It is very, very dire. It's weird. I think support your creators, support your favorite creators, tune into the creators who are actually like selling you the product, or not even selling you the product, but giving you content in ways that are not predatory and weird, because there's a lot of them and they are out there. You just have to hunt and connect.
Yeah. Amen.
This has been the Bruce Poinsett Show. Again, you can catch us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Numbers FM 96.7, or you can catch clips on youtube.com/BrucePoinsett. If you want access to exclusive bonus coverage, you can go to patreon.com/BrucePoinsett. And make sure to follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TheNumbersFM. That's numbers with a Z. Or on the Numbers Podcast Network on all podcasting platforms, or thenumberspodcast.com. Again, that's numbers with a C.